The Young Messiah movie, filling in information that the Bible doesn't talk about. Good, bad, Christian entertainment. We'll take it up today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Line of Fire broadcast today. This is Michael Brown. Another big election day, but we're not going to start there. We're going to start with Hollywood. We're going to start with the movies. This is Michael Brown. Thank you for joining us today. 866-348-7884, the number to call. I don't know if you've ever read a book, and then after reading the book is made into a movie, and you go see the movie. The general theory is that the movie is never as good as the book. Why? Well, it's only if you read the book. In other words, if you read the book yourself, you're picturing the characters to look a certain way. You're picturing the events to unfold a certain way in your mind's eye. You're hearing the voices certain ways, and the characters come alive in your brain a certain way. And then when you see it, it's like, oh, that's different than I saw it. Now, all the more when it comes to Scripture. And like you, I love the Word, and I don't like to see things misrepresented or twisted. And if there is, say, an account in Scripture that's incredible, that's mind-boggling, that's awe-inspiring, and then Hollywood plays with it, thinking, why'd they do that? Wasn't the biblical account good enough? In fact, sometimes it seems like rather than filling in the blanks, and I understand Hollywood's need to do that if there's not a full narrative given, or the creative artistry, or the director, or the producer, or the screenwriter, and they're trying to fill in gaps or give color to something that is only limited in terms of information in the Word. But there are times when the scriptural account is much more dynamic and much more dramatic and much more intense. I'm thinking, what? Why do I have to play with that? So sometimes, because I can be so much of a stickler for this, I get frustrated watching a biblically based movie, even when overall it's a good movie. And I have to kind of look past that and then just look at the overall power of the message and how it lines up with the larger themes of Scripture and things like that. That being said, the Young Messiah movie is something very different. What does the Bible actually tell us about the early years of Jesus? What does the Bible tell us about what happened from his infancy until his 12th year, where he was having religious debates with the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem during the Passover? From there to his 30th year, when he is immersed, Luke tells us he's about 30 years old when he's immersed by John. So we don't have that filled in. Now, there are other accounts. They're non-biblical. They're mythological. They're made up, where people fill in the blanks. Some are hostile, and they make Jesus into a wicked person. Some are just complete figments of people's imagination and make him up into this surreal character. Nothing to do with the Jesus of the Bible. On the other hand, it's fascinating to speculate. Is the speculation good or bad? You could say if God wanted us to know more, he would tell us more. Or you could say by not telling us more, he makes us wonder. So the Young Messiah movie is about these years, which for the most part, aside from the 12th year of Jesus, we don't have information about. We're going to be joined by Ted Baer, who's been an insider for many, many years, a Hollywood insider, working as a Christian witness and working to inform Christians about what's good and what's bad in Hollywood. We'll talk about it when we come back. 866-34-TRUTH. Is this another good opportunity to have a talking point where you talk to your friends about Jesus, or is this dangerous speculation?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What do we tell our little boy?
How do we explain God to his own son?
Keep your power inside you until your Father in heaven shows you the time to use it.
That's from the Young Messiah movie. I'm being joined now by Ted Baer, who has famously said he who controls the media controls the culture. Ted is the founder and publisher of Movie Guide, the family guide to movies and entertainment. He's chairman of the Christian Film and Television Commission. And what I just found out about Ted today is not only did he study at places like Dartmouth and Cambridge and the University of Munich and others, but he's got a law degree from New York University School of Law, finished theological studies at the Institute of Theology at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, has a Doctor of Humanities from Belhaven College, and he was president of the organization that produced the Chronicles of Narnia. So I've followed him mainly over the years on Movie Guide, but didn't know about the rest of his background. Ted, welcome to The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be with you today.
All right, Ted, how many years have you been in the thick of Hollywood from a Christian perspective?
Well, I've been in the thick of Hollywood from a non-Christian perspective and a Christian perspective for 69 years, almost 70 years. So, because I grew up in the industry, my parents were movie stars. My father won the box office award in 1936. He did a lot of dramatic movies, and he did a Western series, which everybody seems to know about, Bob Tex Allen. It was before Gene Autry, before The Singing Cowboys, before John Wayne, which was about 10 years later. And then he was on Broadway for many years. So I grew up as a left-wing commie pinko rat, and somebody gave me a Bible after I put together the funding for 5 feature films, and I was forced into reading the Bible, and suddenly God turned my life around, and all the nefarious activities changed, and I went to a seminary in New York, and they elected me to be head of the organization that did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on CBS television. We got 37 million viewers, and I said, well, let's, you know, how can we change the industry? So, you know, it had taken them from 1954 to 1979 to get The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on CBS. And then they said, we want to do it as a movie. And I said, well, if it takes another 25, 26 years, I'll be 60 when the movie comes out. So here we are. We've started changing the industry. There was one movie with positive Christian content when we used the strategy of what we do now, the report to the entertainment industry and others. And now it's about 60% of the movies. And now there's a flood of movies with faith and values coming out, like Risen and God's Not Dead 2 and Miracles from Heaven and Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments and all these wonderful films. So this will be the 2 years ago, it was called the Year of the Bible because Mark and Roma did the Bible and then they did AD. And now it's probably the Year of Evangelism because you've got one movie after another talking about your personal relationship to Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's incredible to hear. And your perspective in a short couple of minutes really is quite panoramic. Ted, let me ask you this. I have charted what happened from the late 50s, early 60s, then with the radical shift and the counterculture revolution. So you went from movies like West Side Story and My Fair Lady to Midnight Cowboy, and then years later, Natural Born Killers, and then who knows what the latest perverse movie is that's out there. And of course, there was the moral code, the Hays Code, where you know, if you're going to have a criminal scene, then the criminal had to end up getting caught, or the bad guys couldn't be the ones who won, or, and then, you know, things just went so far out the window to such an extreme. Are you actually seeing kind of a reaction back now the other way, maybe without the formal code, but just either popular opinion or Hollywood undoing itself? What's your take?
Well, let me give you a little bit more background than right there. In the mid-60s, what happened to those 100% of the films in 66 were broad audience films that you could take any teenager to and any child to, as a matter of fact, even though some of them have very serious themes. They were broad audience, and they were broad audience for a purpose because the studios didn't want to lose money at the box office. By 1966, 44%. There were 44 million people going to the movies every week, and by 1969, it went down to 17 million. And what happened was that the more conservative, faith-based people who were supporting the Protestant Film Office pulled their funding. It wasn't some left-wing conspiracy. It wasn't some, you know, some of us on the far reaches of society. It was the conservatives who said, oh, we shouldn't be doing this anymore. And they'd kept movies clean and wholesome from 1933 to 1966. So they withdrew their funding, and the head of Paramount, Sam Engle, said, if you take the salt from meat, the meat's going to rot. And the meat rotted within 3 years. You went from The Sound of Music to the first sex and Satanism film. You went from the greatest story ever told about Jesus Christ to the first X-rated film. So evil triumph because good men do nothing. And good men have pulled out of a lot of mission fields. I mean, I've shot films in Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka went from being 92% churched, and when the church left in 1950s, early 50s, it went back to Sinhalese and Tamil, and now over 500,000 people have been killed. So evil will triumph whenever good men do nothing, and good men in the mid-60s, retreated from the box office, retreated from the entertainment industry, retreated from being salt and light in the government. So we can look at a whole set of areas where people just rolled over and said, we don't need to be concerned anymore. And so that's we're facing the consequences. Pagans are always going to be pagans. It's up to Christians to be salt and light.
Yeah,
if we're not going to be salt and light, we're going to lose the culture, and we're doing it. We've done a great job of losing the culture.
Yeah, haven't we? And then the escapism mentality, too, that, hey, Earth is not our home, or Jesus is coming any minute, so why bother? And then we complain when things go down on our watch. What you have expressed in much more detail and much more eloquently is what I've simply said in terms of, I'm not so much concerned with the presence of darkness, I'm concerned with the absence of light. But you are saying, though, that there is some light that is returning and is shining, and therefore helping Hollywood as a whole, because people are now going to be returning. I mean, for years we've heard that, say, a children's movie or a family-based movie does far better than your average R-rated movie. And then we think, well, these Hollywood ideologues, they're just not interested in it. But there's more to it. There are others that haven't come forth.
Yeah, actually, I can unpack that. You know, what we do is we do this detailed economic analysis of the box office. And when we started doing it back, Movie Guy back in 85 and started the ministry in 78, just before The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. In 85, there was one movie with positive Christian content. By 1991, when we started doing the report to the entertainment industry, there was just a handful. There were only six family films in 85. Most of them were mediocre. But if you went head-to-head, because I did a radio program with one of the big directors in Hollywood, and he's saying, well, sex and violence sells. And I said, well, let's just go over the details. Let's look at the top 10 films. Let's see. I guess at that time it would have been Lion King and Prince of Egypt, and I started reading them off, and I said, when do we get to the bad ones? And he hung up, and the radio host said, this is the first time anybody's dropped off, because that whole thing of sex and violence selling was a myth. In the top 10 films right now, none of them are rated R. And so what we did is we start publishing those criteria. We started showing people what made it money. We started looking at the box office in terms of 150 criteria and saying, do you want your movie to work? This is what you have to do to make it work. How many empty seats do you want in the theater? How do you want to reach these people? So we provided a tool for them to say, oh, we can do better. And many of the top producers, writers, and directors use that tool. One of the founders of Legendary Pictures, who've done more than $12 billion at the box office, gets our report to the entertainment industry and uses it to take Superman to church so he can take a leap of faith. So we don't come at it from being a local church or whatever. We come at it from saying, how do you want to make money? And we'll show you how to make money, because we believe that the gospel is true, that the thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy, and Jesus came to give you a more abundant life. And if you apply biblical principles, you can live and do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate you unpacking that. All right, we've got some more time to talk about this, but just in 1 minute, give us your personal opinion of the Young Messiah. We'll unpack it on the other side of the break, but in 1 minute, your personal view of Young Messiah.
Well, in terms of movie making, now remember, we look at things in terms of 150 criteria. So we look at ontology, epistemology, and all of the aesthetic values and everything else. In terms of movie making, it's one of the richest, most beautiful movies that has ever been made. In terms of Jesus films, there have been 140 Jesus films. The Jesus film that everybody remembers is only 70% gospel. So anytime you cast Max von Sydow in The Greatest Story Ever Told, you'll probably be moved away from whatever the real Jesus looked like. So we have to talk about homiletics as opposed to hermeneutics, and then how do the homiletics concur with the hermeneutics. So there we are.
All right, so good preaching versus line-by-line biblical interpretation. We come back, let's point you to Ted Baer's movie guide so you can know where to go. And you talk about a man rich with information. Next time I'll have to schedule him for like 8 hours and draw on the deposit within him. So we'll hear more about Young Messiah. Is it good preaching filling in the blanks? We'll see.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Listen well, because I'm only going to tell the story once. One morning, my room filled with light, and it spoke to me, so that from my womb would come a son. You, named Jesus.
Mary, did you know that your baby the blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will come the storm?
Yeah, that's all one voice. Amazing rendition of Mary, did you know? But it is talking about Jesus as a boy. And joining us to help us understand the power of the movie Young Messiah, is it good, is it bad? Ted Baer. Ted, what's the best website for folks to go to so they can get your insights on the movies?
Go to movieguide.org, movieguide.org. It's also the same as movieguide.com, but the prime one is movieguide.org. So, we have a lot of apps. We have a date night app, a family app that you can find a new family movie every day that you can get through streaming or DVD. So we have a lot of tools to help people choose the good and reject the bad.
Excellent. So you said with Young Messiah, we're looking at the difference between homiletics and hermeneutics. So homiletics you're going to unfold the text.
That.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. What people do is when anybody does a movie, we've only analyzed 140 movies that have been done since 1897 about Jesus. Those are the movies that are the historical Jesus-type movies. Then there's all sorts of movies that we call Christ movies, that are just allegories, like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when Aslan dies on the stone table. So let's say you're looking at the Christ allegory movies. When you look at The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I was involved with when I was head of the company that produced it in the late 70s, what you're looking at is, does it cohere, does it agree with Orthodox creedal Christianity? In other words, did God create the world? Did the world sin and go into evil? Did people have to repent? Did God provide a way for our salvation? Did Aslan die on the stone table like Jesus died on the cross? Where are the parallels? And do the parallels agree with an Orthodox theology? Now, a lot of times, there are movies that come out that do not agree with Orthodox. They're preaching, but they're preaching another gospel. And, for instance, The Last Temptation of Christ was mm-hmm. preaching another gospel because it didn't deal with Jesus as a real person who fully God and fully man, pure. At one point in the beginning of Last Temptation of Christ, there's even a line that Jesus is saying that he is the worst of all sinners, etc., which meant that he couldn't die on the cross for us. So Last Temptation of Christ does not fit the hermeneutics that would support it from a biblical point of view. And we evaluate pastors in the same way when they're giving sermons. Does their sermon, and they're telling illustrations, they're telling parables, they're telling allegories, they're telling metaphors, cohere with a biblical perspective? So the Young Messiah coheres with a biblical perspective in almost every way. We took out, and I was with it from the beginning. We took out the monophysite problem, that you'd say that Jesus was only one nature. He took out the canonic problem, which says that Jesus gave up his divinity to become man. He was fully God and fully man. So all of those were fixed. So the young Messiah coheres with a biblical creedal gospel. But the better than that, the young Messiah is a way to tell the story just as if you were preaching a sermon, just as if you were saying The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that can help people understand. When I did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on CBS television, we got thousands of letters, and one letter struck me very deeply because a man said that his wife had been nagging him about Jesus for years, and he could never understand the atonement until he saw Aslan die on the stone table to save Edmund. So this is just another way to get into the story, and what we need to do is to tell people, once you find out this story, let's go to the Bible for the source. A friend of mine, my uncle, was a Marine and tough guy and atheist and always would argue about atheism, and I'd been on that side of the fence when I was young, and he saw The Passion of Christ, and months later we had dinner together, and he said, you know, the first time in my life I wanted to know more about Jesus. Now, The Passion of the Christ is not even based on the Bible. It's based on a vision to a nun in the 1800s. So, but it ignited in him the desire to know more, and he said he couldn't find anybody to talk to him about Jesus. So The problem was not the movie, The Passion of Christ. The problem is that the members of the church, you and I, did not go out to help people understand that they're going to find the rest of the story in the Scripture.
All right, so when it comes to Young Messiah and the 2.5 minutes or so that we have, overall, you've seen so many movies, but this being somewhat unique, how did it move you, impact you? Did it give you any greater desire to look at the person of Jesus more?
Absolutely, but of course, I worked on it, so...
Oh, that's all right. Full disclosure, that's okay.
I can tell you what we fixed and made it as creedally responsible. I mean, let me give you that story. One of the original scenes about 5 years ago in the script was when the bully is bullying the girl. Jesus, looks at the bully and the bully falls and dies. You know, he said, you can't have Jesus kill somebody. Jesus died for his enemies. So now, the adversary throws an apple. The bully falls on the apple. He's knocked out, and Jesus comes to pray for him, the young Jesus. So that's coherent with his nature as fully God, the God of love, the God who loved us so much that he sent his only begotten Son, that all who believe in him be saved. So we fixed a lot of little problems like that. And it's wonderful because it takes you much deeper into the gospel. How do you represent this wonderful knowledge that Jesus is fully God and fully man, the homoousian conflict? It's one of the great things, but representing it is one of the toughest things in the world. So go see the movie, because I think it does it very well.
All right, hey, tell you what, since you were so concise in that, another minute, Risen, what were your impressions on that?
Oh, I love Risen. I think it's like the case for Christ. It's about Clavius looking for Jesus. Pontius Pilate is just upset that the body has disappeared, and he doesn't want to believe in the resurrection. So it's a story for people who have doubts, that you're finding out that Jesus is alive. Jesus is alive right now in our lives, and you need to find that, because his whole purpose for being alive is to give you a more abundant life so that you can have the power of the resurrection in your own life.
Mm. So, friends, go to movieguide.org. I've been there so many times over the years. You're not just getting a critic's view of a movie. You're getting someone and a team with sound theology, with love for the Word, with love for orthodoxy, who's looking at the movies through that grid, both for Christians and for non-believers. Ted, we're indebted to you. We've got to have you back on. I've got a million more questions for another time. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Have a great day. God bless you, Michael.
Bye-bye. God bless. All right. That is movieguide.org. So check it out. And if you haven't gone to see Young Messiah or Risen, by all means, see the movies and then let us know. Let us know your take. While you're online, we have just posted an amazing video, a testimony of a woman who came out of a lesbian relationship about to marry her partner, with her sister who led her to the Lord, both on the radio with me. We've just posted the video interview of that. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest video.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are switching now from Hollywood to politics. How far do Christians get involved in the political scene? I voted with my wife Nancy earlier today, and in a little while I want to play a phone call that we got. We had to edit it for radio. I want you to hear that in a moment. But Ted Baer, who's just with me from MovieGod.org, said something very interesting, that when Hollywood started to produce bad movies in the 60s, that a lot of conservatives pulled out, and then Hollywood went down in a hurry. And his view was it wasn't so much the fault of the people putting out the raunchy movies, it was the fault of the conservatives and the Christians stopping their influence. They pulled out, so who's going to rise then? The light starts to stop shining, the darkness is only going to rise. Is it the same with politics? Is it the same with the realm of voting and getting involved in political races and things like that? Have Christians basically said, well, we're citizens of a heavenly kingdom, we don't get involved here, and have we then been part of the problem in America? I'm joined by Dr. Richard Land, long-term Southern Baptist leader, now the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, an extraordinary wealth of information, who somehow failed to turn his wristwatch and car clock ahead over the weekend, and we missed each other by an hour yesterday. Dr. Land, second time is a charm today.
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, I wrote an article, an op-ed, talking about the dangers of becoming too attached to your smartphone. But if I'd had my smartphone with me, it wouldn't have happened. But my smartphone was being, my secretary was putting some stuff into it as I ran some errands. And so, yeah, I just got caught by the time change.
So, well, hey, that means you're not a slave to the digital age, correct?
Well, I should be, evidently. More of a slave, anyway.
A bit more, yeah. I had it in mind for days because I'm a late-night person, and I had to do an early morning Sunday debate in South Carolina, so I was thinking about it days in advance. But let's start here.
I spoke on Sunday morning, and my cell phone woke me up at the right time, and I got it to my speaking engagement. I just hadn't changed my wristwatch and my car phone. My car clock. Anyway.
Yeah, I got it. I understand. Been there, done that myself. Thankfully, I didn't miss my own show, but that could have happened.
I did that once. Very embarrassing.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've each had our stories, I think. So let's just take it a minute and a half, and then we'll get to unpack this in the next half hour. Do you believe that a Christian has a duty to vote here in America?
Yes, I do. And it goes under Romans 13, which is the most sustained passage of the New Testament that tells us about our duties as citizens. We are to obey the law for conscience' sake, that means don't break the law. It means pay your taxes, and I believe it means that we're supposed to be involved. That we are to exercise our franchise. Jesus looked at a decaying and a dying world, and he turned to the Christians and he said, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Salt has to touch that which is going to preserve." I'm a carnivore. I'm a Texan. I'm a big fan of beef jerky. But if I kept raw beef, if I kept beef in my suitcase or my briefcase, it would rot. But it doesn't, because it's been cured with salt, and so it preserves it from rotting and putrefying. But if the salt didn't come into contact with the beef, it wouldn't do any good. Jesus is calling us to go out into the world and to be the salt of the earth, to touch the world and try to stop the decay. And then we're to be the light of the world. He said, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven," which means we need to be close enough to the world that they can see the light and they can feel the heat. Every great social evil in our society, in America, that has been substantially solved, has been solved because people of religious faith brought their religious convictions to bear into the public square and said, "This is wrong, it should be illegal, and it should stop."
Mm. All right, that's quite a statement. Let's get some examples. I just voted. If you live in North Carolina, Ohio, Missouri, Illinois, you have the opportunity to vote today. Florida, let's make a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm delighted to have on the air with me now Dr. Richard Land. He's the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. He is a respected scholar, cultural commentator, radio host, and church leader for many, many years. As we talk about the Christians' involvement in politics, Dr. Land, before we unpack what you said right before the break about every major positive change where something bad in society has been removed, it's been removed because of the involvement of people of faith, of Christians in our society. Before we get into that, what about the larger notion that somehow politics is just a dirty word, as if we don't dirty our hands with that because it's all corrupt, it's all impure, and you can't get involved with it without getting dirty, almost hands off Christians and politics. What's wrong with that thinking?
Well, I think it's like the Pharisees who drew their robes around them and didn't help the Good Samaritan. We have an obligation and responsibility. Jesus said, "Be salt and light. Be salt in a world that is decaying and needs preservative. Be light in a world that is dominated by darkness and needs to have illumination from the gloom." There ought to be a direct relationship between the percentage of Christians in a town or a community and the moral atmosphere and the moral Sitzimleben of that community. If there's not, then there's something wrong. We're not called to go in, to be saved and go into a holding pattern until it's time to go on up and be with Jesus. We're called in order to fulfill God's mission for us, and that includes service. It includes speaking out against slavery, speaking out against segregation. Dr. King, when he wrote that letter from the Birmingham jail, he said, "I'm in jail because I refuse to obey an unjust law." And it's an unjust law because it doesn't coincide with the moral law of God.
Got it. So ultimately, politics is going to be weighed by God's laws and God's righteousness and God's character, and that's where we come into play. So give me an example or two about positive social change that came. So the whole nation benefited from it because of the involvement of
Christians.
Well, the
Civil Rights Revolution is the one that most readily comes to mind. Dr. King was a Baptist minister. He told reporters, he said, "You don't really understand what we do because you don't understand why we do it." And Dr. King, his whole ministry was based upon the gospel and the fact that the racial segregation system that they faced in the South was morally wrong based upon the law of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it was that confronting of that to white Southerners in particular that caused, Michael, without Dr. King, I don't know how we would have gotten through that period without a great deal more bloodshed. The fact that we got through it with relatively little bloodshed and we came out on the other side far more reconciled than we would have otherwise is a direct result of his commitment to nonviolence and his commitment to the gospel and confronting American Christians with the disconnect between what we believe and what we say and what's taught in the Bible and the segregation and the racism that was prevalent in our society. The anti-slavery movement was led by people of faith. The American Colonization Society, the Abolition Societies were all founded by Christian ministers. Wilberforce, a Christian statesman, was responsible for the ending of the slave trade in the British Empire. The reform of child labor laws, that was done by Christians. The pro-life movement in this country, which has saved millions of babies' lives, is a direct result of Christians coming into the marketplace of ideas and saying it is wrong to kill unborn babies, and we're going to do everything we can to stop it.
Mm. I made a statement at a rally for Senator Ted Cruz on Sunday that we need a God-fearing president. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And if we want a wise president, we need a God-fearing president, and that a God-fearing president will be in the best interest of atheists and agnostics as well. Do you concur with that?
I absolutely do. I think that would be the best option. The second best option would be a person who is operating out of Christian virtues and Christian values, but who may not be a believer himself. That the best option would be a believer. But I would take a person who's operating from a Christian worldview over a Christian who's not operating out of a Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll give you an example of that. In 1980, Theodore White, who wrote these famous books, you know, The Making of the President, he said that in 1980, you had two very recognizable American types running against each other. You had the Sunday school teacher running against the sheriff. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Carter was the Sunday school teacher, and Reagan was the sheriff. Now, mm-hmm. I know enough about Southern Baptists to know that Jimmy Carter is probably a born-again Christian, but his worldview and his politics are totally out of sync with the presuppositions of his Christianity. For instance, in 1976, he went around saying, I'm a born-again Christian, and I believe in the basic goodness of the American people. Well, if you're a born-again Christian and you're consistent, you don't believe in the basic goodness of anybody. And Ronald Reagan, I came to know later, I don't have much question in my own mind that Ronald Reagan was a born-again believer. But he was someone who was operating more out of a Christian worldview. And that's what we need. We need somebody who's wise, somebody who understands the political realm and the international realm, but who's also operating out of a Christian worldview and is in the, I think, one of the disqualifications for being president is if you want the job badly. The people who have been the best presidents have been people who've wanted the job for a reason other than self-glorification. They want to be president for a reason. Ronald Reagan wanted to be president for a reason. He wanted to restore America. And the real debate that's going on in this country right now, it's been going on ever since Mr. Obama was elected, is we have one group of people who want to transform America and remake it into Sweden. And we have another group of people that want to restore America to what it was.
Yeah, and the question is, when we look back, we're not talking about a theocracy. I mean, the moment people hear these words, they think it's a theocracy. So what's the difference between what you're talking about and a theocracy?
Well, a theocracy is ruled by religious rulers. I don't want that. I don't frankly know any evangelicals that want that. We want a government that is operating under biblical principles, the biblical principles upon which the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are written. You know, we believe that all men are created equal and they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They didn't just pull that out of the air. They got it from the Bible. The American civilization is based upon Judeo-Christian principles. But I don't want the government to sponsor religion. I don't want the government to censor religion. I want the government to be an umpire that doesn't sponsor religion, isn't a cheerleader for religion, isn't a coach for religion, and isn't the reverse of those either. I want a government that is open to people bringing their own understanding of the faith into the public square, and we have a civilized and orderly debate of ideas and beliefs, and we move forward from there. And Christians seek to be salt and light. We seek to influence government as citizens, and we seek to make government and society better. We don't seek to coerce. As Roger Williams, one of my Baptist forefathers, used to say, for any man to coercively interfere with another man's faith is soul rape.
So you are advocating the opposite of that. So the America that you're speaking about, an atheist can advocate for his or her views and seek to advocate for them in the public square and vote accordingly, as their atheism would affect their moral and societal
That's right.
choices. And a Christian would do it, but we believe that the origins of our country are based on biblical Christian principles, and that the country will do best when it follows those principles. So that's going to be our role to live it out and to advocate for it in the best interest of the society.
That's right. And it's the progressives that want a theocracy. They want an a-theocracy. They want a fascist state in which they shout down and do not allow to speak people that disagree with them. I disagree with everything that Madeleine Murray O'Hare said, and I defend to the death her right to say it.
Yeah, exactly. And our soldiers will fight to the death to preserve our liberties for those very things, even the liberties of someone to speak against the army. All right, listen, when we come back, I want to focus very specifically on the current election and why you believe it's so critically important. But just in 20 seconds, is this really a major election in your view?
I think it's the most important election in American history since 1860.
Got
if we hadn't elected Abraham Lincoln, we wouldn't be a country.
Got it. All right. So I do not know Dr. Richard Land to be someone given to hyperbole and all types of crazy end time speculation. And he's saying the most important election since 1860. I want to find out why. And if you haven't voted and this is your day to vote, listen very carefully when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Dr. Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. I've had a good number of friends who've gone through the seminary. Some of my colleagues, like Dr. Frank Turek, one of the nation's top apologists, grads from the seminary. I have the privilege of being an adjunct professor at Southern Evangelical Seminary, an extraordinary school, a unique school, producing tremendous results in person or online. So find out more by going to ses.edu, ses.edu. Dr. Land, before the break, you said that in your view, this is the most important election since 1860 when Abraham Lincoln was voted in. And if he wasn't voted in, America as we know it today wouldn't exist. Obviously, we would have been torn apart by the war or the conflict over slavery. I've been around you in different settings, and I've never known you to be one given to hyperbole. So please explain why you feel so strongly about this.
Well, I think we're at a fork in the road, and it's not a fork that goes left and right. It's a fork that goes up and down. It takes 12 years going in one direction at the federal level to really transform the country. 8 years is not enough time. But if we have a liberal progressive successor to Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, whether it's Hillary Clinton or whoever it is, and they have four more years to take over the judiciary in terms of nominations and to continue to transform the country, we may very well be beyond redemption. It may be there may be no going back. We may have come to the place where we just have changed. Where our genetic code has changed. On the other side of the coin, I think that Donald Trump is an extreme overreaction to the lack of leadership and the lack of understanding of America's role in the world by Barack Obama. And I think he's got some real serious flaws. You know, we're in a situation where we've got a pitchfork revolution going on with enormous increase in support for populist candidates like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and at the same time, a Wall Street Journal poll says that 62/3 of American registered voters do not feel they can vote for Donald Trump, and 56% say they do not feel they can vote for Hillary Clinton. So if Trump and Clinton are the nominees, we've got this enormous dissatisfaction, and yet we're going to have a suppressed vote. That undermines the confidence in government that we need to have for our democracy to continue to exist. I think this is a terribly important election for many, many reasons. And by the way, Abraham Lincoln was elected on the third ballot in a contested convention in 1860, not on the first ballot.
Mm. That is something that probably most of us were not even aware of. Joey, grab clip number 13 for us. This obviously is just one caller. This is just one person. But they seem to express the sentiments and many others who are supporters of Donald Trump. Clip number 13, this was left on our office voicemail.
Mm-hmm. We're voting for Donald Trump. We're taking back our country and going to run it like a business. If you don't like it, you can f*** off.
Mm. Of course, we had to bleep out the expletive. Again, yeah. That's one caller. But aside from the anger behind it, which is often representative mm-hmm. of what Donald Trump is appealing to, can a president just come in and run America like a business?
No. Although Mr. Obama, you know, one thing you've got to give him credit for is he has shown us the real power that a president has if he chooses to exercise it and he's not too concerned about the Constitution. And Mr. Obama has not been terribly concerned about the Constitution. I think Donald Trump is dangerous because Donald Trump, we don't know what Donald Trump would do as president because Donald Trump doesn't know what Donald Trump would do as president. Donald Trump is an oscillating chameleon who's driven by ego and by his own emotional reactions. He could do wildly contradictory things. I mean, he's changed his mind on some issues within 24 hours. In fact, in one debate, while during the debate, he changed his position.
Right,
now,
right.
Now, Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, we know what she would do, and it's all bad. So, right. You know, what a terrible choice. I pray every day that we're not faced as Christians with that choice between voting for Donald Trump and voting for Hillary Clinton.
Now,
there have got to be better choices.
Yeah, and of course there still are at this point, thankfully. There was a statement made by Jerry Falwell Jr. as he's further defending his endorsement of Donald mm-hmm. Trump. I mean, on the one hand, he's kind of referred to him as like St. Donald, and then kind of backed away from it, then going back to it. But now he said, look, he's like King David. David was a man after God's own heart, even though he committed murder and adultery. Now, of course, to compare Donald Trump to King David is quite obscene to me. And
it's
David
libelous.
Was a man.
It's libelous.
David was a man who read the Psalms and compare that to Donald Trump. Yes, he sinned grievously, and he repented. It's on his resume that he pursued God earnestly and loved God deeply and was a man after God's heart, and he sinned grievously, paid the penalty for it, and repented in agony over it, and his words are preserved in Psalm 51 to compare him to Donald Trump. I mean, again, we're not here to bash Jerry Falwell Jr. How can anyone think in those terms, though? It's utterly mind-boggling to me.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, first of all, Donald Trump has defined himself out of the Christian faith, as I understand the Christian faith, when he says he's never felt the need to ask for forgiveness. Well, to me, the minimum to become a Christian is you've got to acknowledge that you're a sinner and you've asked God to forgive you and you trust the price that Jesus paid on the cross for your sin. So, you know, I don't see Donald Trump being able to even in any way, shape, or form mimic the contrition and the heartbreak of Psalm 51.
Right.
And David didn't go around bragging about having gone to bed with some of the world's most beautiful women. He had the decency to try to hide. He was ashamed of his relationship with Bathsheba. He didn't promote it to the world. Frankly, the only thing I can say about Jerry Falwell Jr.'s endorsement of Donald Trump is that I know that his father wouldn't have done it. And it's yet one more argument for why we don't have hereditary monarchies.
Yeah, well said. And everyone can read between the rest of those lines. And I know your colleague Russell Moore had a response as well, published in Christian Post. And I know that David French had a very strong response to that as well. All right, time is very short.
And by the way, yeah. Michael, frankly, Jonathan Falwell would not say that either.
No, he wouldn't. No, and I believe that's been expressed as well. But in the midst of all this, we've just got 30 seconds before we're done. You still have optimism because you were around in the early days of the pro-abortion movement, and that looked more pro-life movement, that looked more hopeless than our battle today.
Well, listen, there does come some benefits with age. I was in college in 1968, and in 1968, the country almost came apart. And I saw a pitched battle take place in the courtyard of my college between the ROTC and Students for a Democratic Society waving Viet Cong flags while our soldiers were dying in Vietnam. So, no, I still have hope. First of all, I believe that, as Chuck Colson was right when he said, it's a sin to be pessimistic if you're a Christian.
Yeah.
We know how it ends.
We know how it ends, and Jesus is Lord. Dr. Land, thanks for taking time out. Always a delight to talk with you, and we'll keep our hope in the Lord. Thanks again. God bless. My bottom line today, my optimism is not based on who is in the White House, but who sits on the throne of the universe. All right. We all want to see change. We all want to see awakening. When it comes down to me, to you, what can we do individually?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give away some free books. Yeah, I'm going to give away some free books. These are mini books. Fuzz Rana and Hugh Ross, What Darwin Didn't Know. They donated some to us. Very, very nice, attractive 24-page books. Very, very helpful. Great information. I'm going to give away a few books. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to give you some questions. You're not allowed to look them up online. You've got to take a guess. Got to take a stab, all right? The number you're going to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And as soon as we get a winner, you're not going to have to come on the line. As soon as you get a winner, Betsy, our call screener, will have the information. As soon as we get a winner, we'll let you know, and then you can try for the next one. But I'm going to give away a few of these. 866-348-7884. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire. Sorry, Johnny. Johnny in today. Johnny filling in for Alex, who is filling in for Betsy. It's Johnny. My bad there. So Johnny is going to have the info. So, Johnny, our first question is right on the screen here. You'll have the answer. Who said it? Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Who said it? I'm going to give you a choice. I'm going to make it easy. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In fact, I'll read a little bit more of the quote, and then I'll give you the choices. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars. Who said it? Choice number one, Benjamin Franklin. Choice number two, John Wesley. Choice number three, George Washington. Choice number four, John Adams. Who said it? Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Johnny, as soon as we get the right answer, let me know, and we'll send the book out accordingly. But we're going to give you some other options. I want to talk to you also about awakening. Look, I'm like you. I'm caught up in the political scene. I voted today. I'm going to be watching. Got a night class tonight from 7 to 9, but then after that, going to be watching to see the votes as they come in and interested to see how people are voting, what's going on. But ultimately, I know that as important as the elections are, and they are very important. All right, we have a winner. We do have a winner. And the answer was George Washington. Yeah, George Washington. Let me read the beginning of that quote again. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. What I want to say is this, as important as the elections are, more important still is the state of the church. More important is awakening in our own midst. They are both important, but if I had a choice of a sleeping church with a God-fearing president or a godless president with an awakened church, I would take the latter, although the goal would be a God-fearing president and an awakened church. So I want to talk through some of these issues. I've got some other quotes for you as well. And then we'll be joined a little bit later by James Robison. And I'm going to ask him the question, what can we do individually to cultivate awakening? We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, this is going to be a little bit different giveaway. Are you ready? I'm going to read something to you that I wrote, and you're going to have to guess when I wrote it, all right? So I want you to be thinking first, was it 1983? Was it 1993? Was it 2003? Was it 2013? Now, you can't call first, just taking a guess. You have to listen to the quote first. The Church of America must come to a difficult conclusion. We must face the cold, hard facts. It's too late for our nation. It's too late for moral reform, too late for social transformation, too late for return to the good old days, unless masses of sinners get saved. Otherwise, there is no hope. For too long, we have sought to make ungodly people godly without converting them from sin. We have tried to make immoral people moral through words, actions, and votes, but it won't work. It can't work. Those who are accustomed to evil cannot do good unless the Lord grants them a new heart. We must go after the souls of lost men and women. That is the call of the church. Then why speak up at all? Why protest in front of abortion clinics? Why take a moral stand for issues? Why confront secular school systems? It's all part of the gospel. It's all part of our being the salt of the earth and the light of the world, of being a voice of conscience to a depraved society, of challenging the godless with the standards of God. Yet it is only part of the gospel. We are called to be fishers of men. Now is the time to awake. When did I write that? Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. When did I write those words? 1983, 1993, 2003, or 2013? Take a guess, and you get a free copy of the mini book, What Darwin Didn't Know. And Johnny, let us know when we have a winner. Is it 1983, 1993, 2003, 2013? Here's what I continued to write. For years, we put our trust in the government. We hoped that the press... Hang on. Johnny, I got to give you the answer. You didn't know. Now you know. Missed that there. So here's what I wrote. For years, we put our trust in the government. We hoped that the president would hold the line, that the right appointees to the Supreme Court would help stem the flood of unrighteousness, that a politically active church would turn our nation back, but we've been misled. We put our confidence in the flesh and our fight for religious rights. We have subtly confessed in man do we trust, but government cannot save. Only Jesus can save, and he must be our message. Oh, yes, we should exercise our rights and vote. We should meet with our children's educators and write to our elected officials. We should pray for mercy on our nation, although the best we can pray now is the prayer of Habakkuk and wrath, remember mercy. We don't have a winner yet. Call in. Keep going. 866-348-7884. Did I write this in 1983, 1993, 2003, 2013? Somebody will get it. I'll keep reading. Maybe it'll become more clear. How can we not do these things? How can we not speak out against the aggressive homosexual agenda? How can we not vote for candidates who'll fight for the truth? If it's right to pray for the salvation of elected officials once they're in office, why not vote for godly candidates to get into office? We're not called to roll over and die. We must stand firm for what is right. But here's where so many of us have missed it. All right, we have a winner. We have a winner. All right, there's more time. We've got some more options for you, but we have a winner. Thank you. And let me just jump in. I wrote it in 1993 from my book, It's Time to Rock the Boat. So for those who think I just started talking like this a few years ago, I wrote that in 1993, the book, It's Time to Rock the Boat. So here's what I said back then. But here is where so many of us have missed it. We cannot expect radical feminists, militant pro-abortionists, hate-filled racists, committed secular humanists, or degraded sexual perverts to respond to our call for morality. That would be like Satan showing sympathy or a demon feeling sorry. It will never happen. Our only hope and the only hope of our nation is for these ungodly sinners to become born anew. They need a change of heart. Their minds are foregone and depraved. Then why confront them at all? Again, the answer is simple. It's part of our witness, part of the message of Jesus. Expose the sinner's sin, tell him there's a remedy. Show him his guilt and point him to the only door of hope. Make him see that he is lost and then tell him how he can be saved. But don't expect him to see the light or to accept the standards of God unless his soul is converted. Conversion of the soul must be our goal. Now, along with that, there are many other reasons we stand up for what's right. But one of them is, as we speak out for what's right, we are exposing and confronting sin. All right, Joey, grab for me clip number six. Clip number six. And I'm going to ask two separate questions here. And Johnny, you have on your list there the answer. I think you'll recognize the voice. Well, we'll tell you what. Let's play this clip first. Clip number six. It's from a famous Jesus movie. Go ahead.
Truly, this man was the Son of God.
I'm only laughing because of the voice being played there. I had a fabulous interview with Ted Baer from MovieGuide.org in the first half hour of the broadcast earlier today, and he was talking to us about great Jesus movies of the past, those that were not so great, talking to us about the new movie Young Messiah and things like that. And so first, let's start here, Johnny. Play the clip again, Joey, and I want you to tell me which actor. Here's where we're going to start. Well, I'll put out three questions for you. You can answer any one. You can only answer one, all right? But we'll play it again in 1 second. You can only answer one of these three. Who is the actor? And I'm not going to give you a multiple choice. Which Jesus movie did it come from? And what role did the actor play? So even if you know all three, you can only answer one. All right, and then when we have a winner for that, then we'll go on to the next one. So let's listen again. It's kind of unusual to have this actor in this scene because you picture this actor in another type of movie genre. But let's listen once more to these words.
Truly, this man was the Son of God.
All right. I love the way those words are intoned. So number one, who was the actor or what movie? Yeah, tell you what, Johnny, put the names down if you can, just the name. You don't have to put the location down. And I'm going to grab these callers, get them on the air. So who is the actor is the first question. Second question is what movie? And third, what role did the person play? All right, so Charlize, which part of that question would you like to answer? Again, only answer one part. Which actor, which movie, or which role? Which would you like?
Which movie?
Which movie? Go ahead.
The Greatest Story Ever Told.
All right, the famous Max von Sydow movie, The Greatest Story Ever Told. All right, stay right there. It's going to take a minute. Johnny will get back to you, and we'll send you a free copy of What Darwin Didn't Know. Okay, so stay there, Charlize. It'll be a little while before Johnny's back to you. Leland, which actor or which role? Which question would you like?
You talking to Charlize? You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, Leland. Which actor? Okay. Do you want to answer which actor or which role? Only one of the two.
Actor is John Wayne.
John Wayne. All right, so we've got Greatest Story Ever Told. Two for two so far. All right, two for two. And now the last question is, what role did John Wayne play in Max von Sydow's The Greatest Story Ever Told? All right, Bordell, what role did John Wayne play?
He played the Centurion.
The Centurion. All right, you nailed it. Three for three. James, Ken, sorry, but we'll have some other questions. All right, so Johnny, our winners are Charlize, Leland, and Bordell. I guess because John Wayne was the tough guy and the cowboy, what would be the equivalent of a tough boy and a cowboy in the first century in the Gospels? I guess that would be the centurion. So there you go. All right, tell you what, Matt, grab another good patriotic quote for us, a good awakening quote, and we'll have a couple more book giveaways for you. And then I want to talk, though. We're having a little fun. Things get so heavy on the show day in, day out. Just lighten things up a little bit. But, friends, I want to repeat what I said before. I would rather have an awakened church with a godless president than a God-fearing president and a sleeping church. But the goal, the greatest, would be a God-fearing president and an awakened church. It would be great for our nation. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. 866-348-7884, the number to call. You know, I've just got a little different quote I want to share with you here. Let me just see which one I want to read. No, not there, not there. Yeah. This is a good awakening kind of quote. All right, now tell you what, Matt, that's a better one. If you're young and you don't know much about American recent history, you might not know about the Watergate scandal, but it did end the administration of Richard Nixon, and it showed corruption at the highest levels of our government. Who said it? Everybody has a little bit of Watergate in him. Who said it? You get the right answer. We give you a free copy of the mini book, What Darwin Didn't Know by Fuzz Rana and Hugh Ross from Reasons to Believe. Super helpful, informative, nicely laid out. And our gift to you today, their gift to us, our gift to you. Everybody has a little bit of Watergate in him. Who said it? One, Donald Trump. Two, Billy Graham. Three, John Wesley. Four, Ronald Reagan. Was it? Now, one of these you should be able to eliminate. So one is a giveaway. Okay. All right. One is a giveaway here. Who said it? Everybody has a little bit of Watergate in him. Was it one, Donald Trump? Two, Billy Graham? Three, John Wesley? Four, Ronald Reagan. We won't be bringing you on the phone this time. Just let us know when we get a winner, Johnny. 866-348-7884. 866-348-7884. Now, one of these is a complete giveaway, and you should know instantly, that it can't be one of these guys, okay? But it could theoretically be three out of the other four. So who was it that made this statement? Everybody has a little bit of Watergate in him. Billy Graham, Donald Trump, first choice, Billy Graham, second choice, John Wesley, third choice, Ronald Reagan, fourth choice. Who was it? Johnny, let us know as soon as we get a winner. I do strongly encourage you to get out and vote today if you have a primary in your state. So that's North Carolina, that's Ohio, that's Florida, that's Missouri, that's Illinois. Nancy and I voted earlier, and I was glad to vote. And I believe in the candidate that I voted for personally. I don't represent our organization. Everyone in the organization is free to do what they please. And our organization as a whole, we do not endorse a candidate. I personally endorse Senator Cruz, and I felt good voting for him. And I felt good because I know that every vote makes a difference. Remember, everyone is just one. Everyone is just one. And so in other words, no one can vote 10 times or 100 times. So everybody has the same ability to make a difference, and that's an amazing thing in our society today. That's a great gift, and many generations have not had that gift around the world, and many countries to this day don't have the gift. So it's neat to have the opportunity. Still don't have a winner, Johnny, huh? It's neat to have the opportunity. Oh, we have a winner. We do have a winner. Thank you. We do have a winner. But let's take advantage of the opportunity that we have. And I do not believe we're at a point now where there are no viable choices. I could understand a certain point. I remember in one state, a guy called me and said, what do I do? The guy's running for governor. One just got out of jail on corruption charges, and the other was a leader with the Ku Klux Klan. Well, I said, I could see why you're going to have a hard time voting. Vote for other officials then, but that's not our problem right now. So that was Billy Graham who said it. And he had endorsed Richard Nixon, the one and only time he endorsed a candidate. He brought Richard Nixon to his gospel outreaches, his crusades. And then obviously, when Richard Nixon's whole administration was tarnished, if you endorse the person, you now look bad. You know, Dr. Ben Carson is already having to explain why he endorsed Donald Trump. And obviously, the more Donald Trump continues to be Donald Trump in the negative sense of the word, the more he does that, the more that Ben Carson can look tainted by it. And Dr. Carson even said, hey, look, worst case scenario, if he's a bad president, it's only for 4 years. That's what you say about someone you endorsed? And yes, there were promises made to Dr. Carson that he'd be involved on one level or another in the administration of Donald Trump. And so already people, I've had people post and say that they respected Dr. Carson so much, but now much less. The same with Jerry Falwell Jr., the same with Sarah Palin, the same with others. Look, everyone's free to endorse who they do. I know some people are upset with me that I endorse Ted Cruz, and they have certain views of him, and I understand it. And that goes with endorsing a candidate. I understand that. But what we have to do is really ask ourselves deep and serious questions about the role of government in America. How much influence does a president have? A lot. The decisions they make affect us. Look, whether you like George W. Bush or not, he made various decisions that got us involved in wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The Iraq war in particular, criticized for that. Afghanistan seemed more understandable with the Taliban colluding with Osama bin Laden. But the intelligence we had said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And there was pretty much, if you're not for us, you're against us mentality at that point. We went into the nation. We tried to turn the nation around and make it into a democracy, etc. Many feel the war was misguided. Either way, the leadership of President Bush was decisive in that regard and got us involved in those two wars, for better or worse. All I'm saying is that's major. President Obama has gotten through his universal health care plan. He has gotten through his goal of redefining marriage. He has continued to be a staunch supporter of Planned Parenthood. He has used the bully pulpit of the presidency to push for gay activist causes and other things. His stance on international issues, his pulling our troops out of Iraq, some would say prematurely. These are momentous events in the life of a nation. The Supreme Court justices he's appointed are extremely liberal, very much radical to the left, obviously have voted against our conservative moral values in case after case. And obviously you can appoint someone and they can surprise you once they're sitting on the court, because it's a lifetime appointment, which is a strange thing to have that as lifetime. I believe Dr. Ben Carson pointed out, look, when they were appointed for life in the early years of American history, the life expectancy was not the same. So appointed for life felt very different than it does today. But these are grave, grave issues. And therefore, I urge you to be informed, to prayerfully consider, and then to get out and vote today. Everywhere where you're listening to me, there are hours left where you can go out and make a difference. Do it. And then we do our part before God and let the elected officials do theirs.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it's a great question from Ronald Reagan. I have wondered at times what the Ten Commandments would have looked like if Moses had run them through the U.S. Congress. Of course, the difference is ancient Israel was a theocracy led by God, whereas modern America is a democratic republic. There is a profound difference, is there not? 866-348-7884. Okay, here's the deal. I'm going to get your blood boiling a little, okay? I'm going to say some things that will upset you. But after you're upset, I want to point you in the right direction. How's that? I want to point you Godward. I want to point you towards faith. I want to point you towards hope. That's where I want to point you. Fair enough? I have an article, wrote it this morning, and it should be posted tomorrow. As predicted, here come the gay bullies. As predicted, here come the gay bullies. And in that article, I talk about a number of things that we've warned about for years. We've warned for years that those who came out of the closet, meaning gay activists, want to put conservative Christians in the closet. I've said that in the LGBT activist lexicon, tolerance means the intolerance of all views but their own. Diversity means their way or the highway. And inclusive means the exclusion of all opposing opinions and values. So day by day, we're seeing this unfold before our eyes. From the UK, Pink News, gay website, obviously, reports that Scotland is training a small army of LGBT-friendly police officers to stamp out hate crime. Meaning that, yeah, they're concerned. They say there are a lot of crimes against gays, lesbians, bisexual, transgender that get underreported. They want to encourage the people to report. But they're going to be on the lookout for these, quote, crimes. Now look, there have been street preachers in England who have been put in jail for reading from the Bible. And part of the passage they read happened to speak against homosexual practice. There have been preachers who have been arrested when they're preaching a message and someone came up to them specifically and said to them, what's your view on homosexuality? They explained it's a sin. Jesus died for all sins. They've been arrested for that. One was arrested when a lesbian felt offended by the guy's preaching, even though he didn't mention homosexuality at all. But she felt offended. She felt hated. He was detained for 11 hours in a prison cell. Ultimately, those charges were thrown out. And he was giving me about $4,000 in compensation. Listen to what Samantha Power, clip number 10, Joey. Samantha Power, U.S. ambassador to the U.N. She's speaking at the Human Rights Campaign Equality Convention. It's the world's largest gay activist organization. They put me on one of their hate lists. Listen to what she has to say. March 12th. 2016, she's speaking to volunteers about the important work around the world that lies ahead.
If we agree that it is wrong when ISIL throws people off of buildings or stones them to death because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, is it any less wrong when a government locks people up for the very same reason? Is it any less wrong when police refuse to investigate an act of violence simply because the victim is an LGBTI person? Is it any less wrong when a person is denied a job or an education or health care simply because of who they love? The severity of the abuse may vary, but the principle is the same. Treating people differently because of who they are is always wrong.
The problem is, in what she's saying, although I agree with justice for all, that no one is given a constitutional right to be specially protected by who they get in a relationship with. And if there are cultural taboos against a man being with a man, and you want to say wear that to work, that might not be suitable for that job. If there's a man who identifies as a woman is now going to impose that in the girls' locker room in college, it's not discrimination to say not in our locker room.
Fire we please, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The trajectory of our country is unmistakable, and it points toward LGBTI equality. It is about time.
That was the voice of Samantha Power. She is the U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., speaking at the Human Rights Campaign Equality Convention just a few days ago, March 12th. And in point of fact, she is advocating for aggressive changes that America will help push around the world, even to the point that other governments are pressured to change their stance on gay activism to conform with our standards which are frankly hurting our nation terribly. There's an awesome video, we just posted it, where I'm talking to two sisters. One young lady led her sister out of a lesbian relationship. She's about to, quote, marry her partner, and the sister got radically saved through the other sister's witness, and they're both on the phone with me. The ultimate answer is the gospel. We just posted it. It's incredible. You may even be in tears watching it. It's at AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest video. But I've been sounding the alarm about gay activism for years, many, many years before it was even on my radar. James Robison was sounding the alarm about these things. And yet you get frustrated. You have this change in the law, that change in the law. Things seem unrighteous. And it's easy to get in the flesh and have a wrong attitude. My friend and colleague, James Robison, is always pointing us in the right direction. James, thanks for joining us again on The Line of Fire.
Always a joy, always. And I was actually kicked off of television with the Fairness Doctrine for simply referencing Romans chapter 1 in the late 1970s and saying that homosexuality is indeed against God, against nature, and that it also would potentially lead to disease, and that was pre-AIDS. And so that assault from this crowd that demands us to be tolerant remains totally intolerant, as all of these who are claiming their rights, not recognizing they come from nature's law and nature's God. When you leave that, nobody understands responsibility or sound principles.
Yeah, so it's easy to get frustrated. It's easy to get in the flesh. We've got major voting today, North Carolina, Ohio, Illinois, Florida, Missouri. We know how important these elections are. Dr. Richard Land was just on with me, felt this is the most important presidential election since 1860 when Abraham Lincoln was elected. But beyond that, and even more importantly, what can we do as individuals to foster awakening? Because we know ultimately the hope of America is not in the White House or the Congress or the Supreme Court, but in Jesus and in the people of God.
Well, we can ourselves immediately receive any correction that the Word of God and Spirit of God convicts and convinces us of. He doesn't do it with condemnation. He does it with a glorious invitation to receive forgiveness and grace. So we all go there. While we're looking at others, we may not understand what they're doing or don't agree with them. We better be very careful as Christians that we don't snipe one another. A perfect example would be that you and I are very close friends. We have the same concerns for the nation. They're very legitimate concerns. I think we understand something about what the foundation of freedom looks like. We know the truth that sets us free. We know what is essential to keep us free. I'm not an endorser of candidates. I just speak truth, endorse the truth, and preach it to all of them. You were led, you said, as you prayed, to endorse Ted Cruz, and I've known him for years and love him and known his dad for nearly 40 years, Raphael. So I said, you know, I'm with you. It didn't divide us. And then a good friend and somebody that I love dearly, I spent an hour, maybe hour and a half talking to him this morning, many hours last week, the week before, and praying. And he, of all things, endorsed Donald Trump. Well, I did not understand or agree. I was encouraging him that was not the best position to take, and it would be hard for people to understand, but he's still family. He's still my brother. And who knows what God will do with some of these decisions we don't understand if we will quit destroying one another with our words and our attitudes, because the evangelical community and much of the community of faith seems to be divided around many different candidates. And if we start sniping one another, we're not going to have the spiritual unity and understanding that enables us to make the right decisions. And right now, we're seeing people who are angry, and justifiably so. They're actually angry about the things. Everyone who's a thinker and understands freedom and understands our founders' intent and the Constitution, we should be angry about them. But the thing we got to understand is the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Mm. If all of this, quote, righteous indignation or this anger is not channeled in the right direction with wise leadership, we're going to make a big mistake. I said to a friend at lunch that Donald Trump is such a dynamic leader. He just excites people. I said he'll get people so excited he can take them right off the cliff and they think they're going to Six Flags.
Yeah. Absolutely. Not overstated. Not overstated either. And what I find in the midst of this, it's easy for us to take our eyes off Jesus. It's easy for us to yes, we're doing things always with him in mind, but he's not our focus. I was just looking on the stream, and we encourage you every time James Robinson's on the air with me and many other times to visit the stream, stream.org. Because when you're at the stream, you're going to get the latest political updates, world news. You'll get great, insightful columns from others. I was just looking at one earlier about the absence of Justice Scalia in his first abortion case that was heard and how his absence was felt. But you'll also get spiritual insight. I'm looking at a new article by Sheila Walsh called The Father's Heart of Forgiveness and Compassion. So ultimately, we've got to keep pointing ourselves and America back to the Father's heart, because he's the only cure for the nation. He's the only hope.
Well, I think you could join me, for instance, in praying for all of those who are still in the race. I would say, looking in, that Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, to certainly see he has room for maturity and growth. I think John Kasich brings a lot to the table, and I pray with him and pray for him. I think you look at Ted Cruz, who really does believe the right things, and we pray that God will give him the ability to bring the cooperation and the bridge building essential to really correct our course. Mm-hmm. And you look at someone like Donald Trump, I think we ought to begin to pray in light of awakening. We ought to pray for the kind of move of God on him that Augustine experienced when he was everything and beyond that Trump has been in his life. And yep. He was totally transformed to become one of the great church leaders, a real miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if we would take some of the energy that we spend talking about the candidates, and it's good to do it, talking about the issues, if we take some of that energy and pray for them, we could really see a great difference. Let me put something out for you, get your response to it. Obviously, we'd love to have an awakened church and a godly president. That would be amazing. But if you could only choose one or the other, if it had to be an awakened church with a godless president or a sleeping church with a godly president, if you had to choose between one or the other, what choice would you make?
An awakened church that delivers the gospel in power and confirms the power of the gospel with their own transformed lives. Yep. If we deliver that gospel in the power of his spirit, in love, without wavering, we will see people like, in my opinion, Donald Trump, who I pray for continually, that he would be transformed by the gospel. And what effect would that have on all the people who see him as a champion, if they saw their champion so moved to meet a real winner, to see a foundation that is unshakable when we build on it? How well might he build if he experienced the power of the gospel, where it's undeniable in its transforming effect on that man's life? And the same with all the candidates. What if they just have a fresh touch, fresh oil, a move of God in their own life that is so obvious that this is something bigger than them? And, Michael, you know that the same power it takes to transform an individual life and awaken the church is the power it's going to take to help correct America's very treacherous and perilous course.
So it's not too late for awakening. You don't hold to a theology that says everything's going downhill from here, just throw in the towel.
What a nonsense idea that is. That's a fatalistic apathy. And it's excusing ourselves from the very reason God left us here as salt and light, to be an influence and make a kingdom imprint on planet Earth. And we can do it. We can put the imprint of God's glory, his presence, his very nature, all over this planet, just like it happened to you and me. Yeah. I mean, this is the work of God. This is a miracle of God in Michael Brown and James Robinson's life. And you and I are growing in the grace and knowledge of the Lord. We're growing together. And you speak correction to me, and I receive it with gratitude. And I may challenge you, and you receive it with gratitude. This is the way we're supposed to live. This is the way America's supposed to live, and the church needs to set the example.
Absolutely. Yes, and your words are always warmly received. In fact, just got one last second. I noticed on the stream, Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, one of the top Hispanic Christian leaders in the nation, the very issues we're talking about, the centrality of Christ in a world divided by left versus right. My dear brother, keep holding the standard high. And as you have access to so many of these candidates, may the Lord really use you to touch them with the gospel. Thanks again.
Thanks, Mark.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, this is the Bernie 2016 YouTube channel. Goes back a couple of months. They've all come to look for America. Here's what's so interesting, that each of the candidates says how much they love America. I believe that Bernie Sanders believes that his program and his socialism is in the best interest of America. Now, I don't know the man at all. I don't know any more about him than 99.9% of you do. I was just hear the little clips and know what he says and things like that. I don't know the man personally or his history. I mean, any more than just the public stuff that we all know. But my assumption is that he loves America, and he believes that socialism and his radical abortion, homosexuality vision is in the best interest of America, in the best interest of freedom and equality, etc. I believe Hillary Clinton loves America. Is it all about her? Well, I imagine there has to be some degree about you if you're running for president. It'd be hard for someone to be that totally selfless, that there's nothing whatsoever about them or personal desire or ambition. But I believe she loves America, and she thinks that her views are in the best interest of America. People like me, not that she knows who I am, but people like me and you, we're not in the best interest of America in terms of our views and our values. And the same, of course, with the Republican candidates. Do I think that there's a lot of ego in the candidacy of Donald Trump? Well, it'd be hard to deny that when he comes in and his, you know, Trump Force One, as they call it, you know, his massive plane and flies over the hangars and he's got this presidential music playing and everything has his name on it, and he's ahead in the polls, and that's what he wants you to know. Of course, his ego's involved with it. I think he'd be the first to admit it. But does he also care about America? I believe he does. I sure believe he does. And, of course, the same with John Kasich and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. I believe they genuinely think that they could help America be a better country, and that their policies would be in the best interest of Americans. So you have an extremely strong conservative like Ted Cruz, far and away the most conservative of any of the remaining candidates, and he genuinely believes that his strong moral conservatism is in the best interest of the nation. Not a matter of imposing religious beliefs on everyone and saying, you must hold to these, you must believe these or else, but rather saying that these principles are what made America great in the past, and these principles are what will help America be great in the future. So I don't doubt that the candidates care about America. Someone said they were endorsing a particular candidate because he really loves America. Well, I would think so. I would assume so. why in the world would you even get within 100 miles of them politically if you didn't think they cared about the country? The question is, what is the best for the country? G.K. Chesterton said, "My country, right or wrong, is a thing no patriot would ever think of saying except in a desperate case. It is like saying my mother drunk or sober." The question is, not are we patriotic, but what is best for America, and which direction is America going, and how will this election impact and influence the direction of America? According to James Robison said that we've got to be careful not to snipe at each other. Obviously, I've taken issue with men like Jerry Falwell Jr. or Pastor Robert Jeffress or Dr. Ben Carson for their endorsements of Donald Trump, in particular the first two because of their religious associations with them. But ultimately, that's their call before God. They would obviously take issue with my endorsement of Ted Cruz. How can we take issue without destroying each other in the process? Because the political spirit, in that sense, is a vicious spirit. It's a take-no-prisoner spirit. It's a no-happy-middle-ground spirit that can just chew up and bite and devour. The same time, a guest I had on earlier, Dr. Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, said that this is the most important election since 1860, and that if Abraham Lincoln had not been elected, and he was elected in a contested convention, he didn't just win outright, that if he was not elected, then America, as we know it, wouldn't be here today. In other words, we would have split, not just had a civil war, but an outright split. And of course, upon his election, there were states wanting out immediately in the South. So we were ready to completely rupture, and if the wrong person was in leadership, we might have ruptured, and we might be two nations to this day. It's possible. It's possible. And so we recognize the importance of the election, and then Dr. Land also said that it takes 12 years to really turn in a certain direction. So if you have 8 years of Obama, then 4 years of Clinton, or 8 years of Clinton, that America will be turned dramatically. The same way to turn things back, you'd need 12 years of candidates who'd be very different than Barack Obama and or Hillary Clinton. Ultimately, though, what we know is that awakening must begin with us, that it must begin with us earnestly seeking God. It must begin with us repenting of our own sin. It must begin with us preaching the gospel. Again, Take a moment to go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest video. When you have a few minutes to do it, okay? When you have a few minutes, go there. You can watch me speaking, and then you'll see a picture of the two sisters, Amanda and Andy, when they called in to share their story of transformation and how it was the witness of Amanda with her lesbian sister, Andy, how she was transformed. And Amanda had read my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, greatly impacted her. Then she shared the gospel with her sister. Her sister was dramatically saved, broke off a quote, marriage she was going to have with her lesbian partner, and is now burning bright for Jesus. And I actually saw a video on Facebook where they're singing together. One's playing guitar and they're singing together and glorifying Jesus. I mean, it's just a joy to see. That's the power of the gospel. And that's where we have to put our hope. And that's the message that we need to spread through the nation, hope and life in Jesus. So go to the website. We've got a bunch of great videos that we've recently posted. We just went over 20,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. So check out the videos there. Share them with your friends. Everything on the YouTube channel is free. And why watch all the trash and waste your time when there's so much quality stuff that'll edify and bless you? Take advantage of it and share it with your friends. My bottom line today, the greatest power that America needs today is the life-transforming power of the gospel.